Welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Hartley. This podcast exists to equip and inspire your heart-centered leadership. Every week, we bring interviews with some of the greatest heart sets and mindsets on the planet. I hope the heartprint of our time spent together is that it creates new possibilities for you and all those you come into contact with. If you'd like to explore what we could make possible for you, then head to abty.co.uk/connect and book in a free 30-minute call to begin our journey. On episode 257, it is an honour to welcome Dr. Yossi Amram to the podcast. Following a career in the Israeli military, Dr. Yossi became an executive coach and psychologist. In his research into spiritual intelligence, Dr. Yossi pioneered the creation of the first academically recognized spiritual intelligence theory, along with an associated model for spiritually intelligent leadership. Dr. Yossi is the author of the new book, Spiritually Intelligent Leadership, How to Inspire by Being Inspired. I hope this conversation raises your spiritual intelligence and inspires your leadership. It's episode 257 with Dr. Yossi Amram. Yossi, welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. How are you, brother?
Good. Thank you, brother. I'm delighted to be here with you. I'm enjoying your warm, welcoming smile.
Oh, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. You know, you put out a book called Spiritually Intelligent Leadership. And, you know, it's been a little while since I've been in corporate. So I left about 5 years ago, but, you know, really starting to get the grips of emotional intelligence. And here you go with another lens on intelligence and spiritual intelligence. I'm really looking forward to having a conversation around how one can deepen in spiritual intelligence. But I want to know how you got there. Like, have you always been spiritually intelligent? Like, I understand your background was in the Israeli military. I'm not sure that's the traditional route to spiritual intelligence, is it?
Yeah, no, I was far from it. Yeah, I started my adult life, shall we speak, in the Israeli military, and I was kind of a shy and introverted kid, but somehow, I don't know how it happened, but ended up rising fast through the ranks and getting all these leadership awards. But the military command and control structure really chafed at my soul, and while it's effective in battle and perhaps managing people on assembly line, it's just not conducive to facilitating human growth and well-being and so on. So that kind of got me interested in, can I somehow someday build a company and organization that supports and inspires people from more humane principles? And that kind of got me on this route to be a tech entrepreneur. I started two companies. Mm-hmm. I took both public, and I was blessed with health and wealth, you might say, but there was some yearning in me that wasn't quite satisfied. And I experienced what in spiritual circles called as a dark night of the soul. And then from that, a spiritual awakening, which actually turned into a manic episode, because it just blew my mind, blew all the circuits of my brain and the way I understood reality. All of a sudden I experienced the interconnectedness of everything and how we're all part of this oneness. But being a CEO of a public company, it was hard to run it from that perspective. So I was eventually pushed out and so on. That was very traumatic, but that changed the direction of my life and then got me to trying to understand, was this just craziness or is there something more real here? Which kind of led me to do a PhD in psychology and research this area of spirituality and intelligence and how it relates to leadership. I had known a lot about emotional intelligence and its contribution to leadership and well-being. And I was like, I'm interested in spirituality. Is there something? Then I heard the term spiritual intelligence. I was like, wow, that would be awesome. But nobody really bothered to define or what exactly it is and how to measure it. If you want to study it scientifically and show that it contributes, like emotional intelligence, there are all these measures and studies and that show that leaders with higher emotional intelligence are more effective. So I set on this path to define what it is, how to measure it, and then demonstrate that indeed it contributes to leadership effectiveness. So that's kind of my what life story and how I got here.
That's so much for us to dig into. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And, you know, I start from the very beginning because, you know, my background was policing, very much command and control. And I wasn't frontline. I wasn't a police officer. I was a civilian and involved in the back office. And the problem with leadership, right, in that environment is that I understand the need for command and control, because in emergency situations, you need that structure and clarity, right? Absolutely. You need to know who's doing what, when, and right. But the problem they had is that they treated all of their work like it was an emergency. And I was in a world where it was, you know, projects and programs and growth and transformation. And you can't run your life like an emergency service and a command and control. So we needed to equip a different style of leadership that was able to flex beyond command and control.
Yeah, very much what I'm talking about. So yeah, command and control is an emergency in battle, but now more and more of our economy is what you might consider knowledge workers. And knowledge workers, you cannot command them to be creative, to be have good judgment. So you need to inspire them. And how do you inspire them? So that's the thing. How do you inspire people that, you know, it's not mechanical robotic jobs that you could tell them what to do? And so the key, though, before you can inspire anybody else, you got to get inspired yourself. So you can't be inspiring anybody else. So leadership and inspiration, first and foremost, is an inside job, so to speak. And we got to start with getting inspired ourselves. And what is interesting is the difference between management and leadership. There's a classical Harvard Business Review article that I studied when I got, was the one of the first cases at Harvard when I got my MBA, was the difference between managers and leaders. And managers manage resources, make decisions, and so on. And that's important and critical. But leaders inspire. And what is the root word of inspire? It is spirit, which comes from Latin, which is the animating life force. So leaders basically breathe aliveness and cohesion into their organization. They articulate a vision, a set of values and mission that align people. And then people have this sense of belonging. We're in this together. And then they bring their best selves to support that, to the extent they buy into that vision and that mission, and they want to see that reality manifested, this dream that we all have as a group. And that's so crucial these days because we'll have work, remote work and isolation. In the U.S., it's been announced by the Surgeon General that we have an epidemic of loneliness. Mm. And so for most people, the group of people, the community that we spend the most of our waking hours is our work. And so having a sense of belonging and alignment of our purpose and vision is so crucial for our well-being as social animals, as human being. And I think that's part of what inspired leadership is about. Provide that vision, that values, that mission, that alignment, that cohesion that creates a community of people that are aligned. And then everybody's energy is multiplied. We share our intention. Otherwise, we're rowing in different direction and organizations get very political and it's all about personal power and it's me against them. And that divides.
Yeah, you have a wonderful quote in your book from the Dalai Lama, which says it's not about eradicating our ego. It's making sure that we have a serving ego rather than a deserving ego. And I think that's a real powerful lens when we look at people's motives for being leaders. Are they looking to be served or are they looking to serve?
Yeah, and there's this whole thing of servant leadership. And also, what are we serving? Are we serving our ego, our self-aggrandizement, or are we serving this vision of the world that we want to see, where people living in peace or happiness or, you know, having a sense of well-being? And I think fundamentally, when we dig deep into our hearts long for a world of connection and harmony and peace and caring and compassion and love and joy. And so if we are in service of that vision and that aspiration for the world we want to live in, where people are connected and inspired and actualized, I mean, wouldn't we all want to live in that world instead of a dog-eat-dog world? And you could see what's happening in the world right now politically with wars. And it's all about because we think we're separate and we're competing, and it's this religion versus that religion, this people versus that people. And you got leaders that have big egos and, you know, trying to hold on to their power. And that's what we get.
We have a world that puts the mind on a pedestal, you know, almost like we want algorithms for everything, you know, probability factors, the reason why we should do things, the three steps to doing it. And, you know, sometimes that puts a bit of a barrier in place when we talk about things like spirit, soul, and we talk about spirituality. And I think you say very clearly from the start, this isn't about believing in a God.
Yeah, not believing in anything. It's really about embodying these qualities, and you might call them virtues, that have been hailed by all the world's wisdom traditions. So regardless if you're a Buddhist and you don't believe in God or anything like that, you just believe in a Buddha nature, or you're Muslim or you're Christian, and you're Christian, you believe in Christ was the Son of God and he was the Messiah, or you're Muslim and you believe in Muhammad was the final prophet, or you're Native American and you believe, you know, in the energy of Father Sky and Mother Earth, whatever your cosmology and theology, all these traditions say, you know, compassion, service, purpose, integrity, gratitude, humility are the qualities that lead to good life. Now, the good news is that modern psychology, there's a field called positive psychology that has studied these very qualities. And in positive psychology, and people like Marty Seligman developed these measures of well-being and so on. And these very same qualities of gratitude and purpose and service and integrity and humility and so on have been shown in positive psychology to contribute to our well-being. And in leadership development, there's a lot of studies now that also, like Bain, one of the top international consulting companies, they looked at, you know, 2,000 employees and so on, and found that employees that are inspired are twice as productive as those that are not. And what are the qualities of inspiring people as leaders? And it is service and humility and centeredness empathy and connection. So, so you have a convergence of what the spiritual traditions said, these are the virtues, regardless of their theology and cosmology. You have the field of positive psychology that looks at these human qualities and how they contribute to well-being. And you have leadership development that looks at what are the qualities that make for great leadership. And all of these things are basically saying, you know, the same qualities. And so I'm calling it spiritual intelligence because these are the qualities that came from all the spiritual traditions. And now modern science is finding out that, yeah, these are the qualities. So you don't have to believe in anything. You just cultivate gratitude. You cultivate compassion. You cultivate a sense of purpose. You cultivate humility. You cultivate intuition. You cultivate presence. You don't have to believe in anything.
I've often said that on the podcast, you know, words like beautiful, joyful, hopeful. The word full at the very end implies that it comes from within. You know, to be beautiful means that we are full of beauty. Therefore, the expression of it comes from the inside out. And I was at a talk recently, and someone took that step further and said, let's be leaderful, which is, you know, basically what you're talking about here is come to the world having already cultivated those spirits within, because, you know, in the good book, it does say about the fruits of our spirit, you know, self-control and grace and patience and, you know, kindness. And so it is a spirit. It's not something that we can plug in. It's not like a drink we can have and all of a sudden we're more, you know, kind. It is literally a energetic some people might call it frequencies, some people might call it just a state. But I love the fact that it's always inside and always available, which is the invitation of the book, right? You've basically developed a playbook for the inner world, for the leader to go within.
Yeah, and work on these qualities one at a time, because as you say, it's not like you could drink a drink and then you're all of a sudden kind, you're all of a sudden compassionate. It's not like you could just read.
Although some people might say that that's the result of coffee. Yeah.
Or you do an MDMA, ecstasy, or whatever, and you might have that experience for a moment. You could take some drug, you can go on ayahuasca journey, whatever. But, you know, to integrate it into your life, it's to build a habit around it. And so, you know, it's not like you could even just read my book and walk away. It's not cognitive. You have to practice it, and you're creating new neural pathways and new habits, and that takes time. But the spirit, the spark, the life force comes from within. But when we connect deeply to it, we actually realize that all of reality is permeated, and the same spark that is within me, the same life force is in with you. And so, you know, yeah, it's beautiful. The hardest thing for people to realize is our own beauty, because we look in the mirror and we see all our blemishes and shortcomings, and we're very hard on ourselves. So yeah, we connect to our inner spark, and we start feeling and filled by this light, this energy, this beauty. But then I open my eyes and I see the same light and beauty coming through your face, and now we are connected. Yes. And there's a resonance between us. And there's like two instruments vibrating at similar frequency. And then we're in harmony, and we could play music together on a team, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you see a beautiful football team or a basketball team. People are moving in harmony. They're just kind of in resonance together. And then you see the beauty outside. And so it's in and it's out and it's all around.
So the challenge that you and I have is that you and I are on the other side of that experience. So anyway, I wonder what I would think listening to this podcast 6 years ago, before I'd had my kind of awakening moment, because I know that when I did that, my perception of the life within, you know, I was having some proper moments. You know, nature is a great place to start. You know, when you start to see that there's life force in all. I've got two little dogs. So looking at the similarities that I have with dogs, you know, they've got eyes and nose and they breathe air. And I was like, I am at one with my dogs. And then I had this moment where this blackbird flew across the highway. And I had this moment of oneness with a blackbird. And I thought, I am losing my mind. and it was just so... It was just overwhelming. It's overwhelming when you are able to see and acknowledge and observe the beauty in everything. But it's not always that beautiful, the awakening, is it? Because you talk about how your dark night of the soul and how there was a manic phase. And in the book, you say there was a blessed irony that it was your ego that catalyzed the dark night of the soul. What's the role in the ego in all this, and being able to surrender and open to the possibilities of the oneness?
Yeah. Okay. It's a big question. So I love it. So yeah, we have these awakening experiences, you said, and it kind of throws us off. It shatters our world perception. So I think of it as kind of a Copernican revolution that we experience. As my friend Steve Farrell, who runs Humanities Team, calls it a Galileo moment. But basically, when up to Copernicus, humanity and everybody thought that the Earth is at the center of the universe. And when you look out at the sky, you see the sun during the day moving across. So naturally, you think that the Earth is at the center and the sun is rotating around it. Okay, but then you'll study more carefully and you have this Copernican revolution where you realize, no, it is the Earth that is rotating around the sun. Now, when you look out, it still looks like the sun is rotating around the earth, but that's, we know at a deeper level that that's not true. Now, we live our lives thinking, and we look out and we see different objects, and we think that we're all separate, and it's, the world is revolving around me, my ego. So I treat everything as objects, like the Martin Buber, this Jewish mystic, talked about the I thou versus the I it. If I'm an object and you're an object, then, you know, I treat you and everything else as objects for my satisfaction, my desire, and I'm separate from you.
Separate.
And so on. But the Copernican revolution is like when we realize, no, we just like the sun, we rotate around the sun, and the earth receives all its life force energy. Everything that came to life on the earth, all the energy, the winds, the water, is because of the energy of the sun that feeds everything and moves the winds, the oceans, and whatever. And so we change our perspective to realize that we're not at the center of the universe, but there's this, the universe is giving us the life force. You can call it God, you can call it the capital S self, but you know, no longer the separate me is at the center of my life, just like the earth is not at the center of the universe, and it is sustained by the sun, by the totality that gives life to me. So then I change my perspective. I'm just a cell in this bigger organism. And when I'm a cell in this bigger organism of life, then I naturally want to serve the bigger organism. It just wouldn't make sense for your, in your body, for your heart to say, I'm going to care about the heart, and I'm going to hold the best blood that's most rich, oxygenated, and I'm going to feel the best. Well, that might work for, all right, for a minute, but then the lungs are not going to get blood with oxygen, and it's not going to function. And then the heart is going to say, wait a second, it's not working, right, for me. So everything in the body works in harmony to sustain the life of the bigger organism. No one organ is saying, hey, I'm about me. So when we have this understanding, this shift of perspective, then we naturally want to be in service of that bigger thing and that we are just a part of. That's when we feel fulfilled and we feel alignment and we feel inner peace. But we each have our unique thing. Just like in the body, the heart has a different function, and the liver has a function, and the lungs have a function, and the kidneys have a function, and each of them are specialized. But actually, life starts with all the cells coming from the same DNA stem cell. But somehow they differentiate and they each know, oh, this is my role and I'm going to do my role. But in essence, they all come out from the same, but then they specialize. So each of us are coming from the same thing and we have our own unique gifts. Life itself is a gift, but my talents and someone else's talents are very different. But when we contribute those talents in service to this bigger thing, we feel fulfilled, we feel a sense of mastery, and our life has meaning and it's joyful.
Yeah, I love that, because in your community section, we'll talk about the pillars in a second, and under your community section, you talk about synthesis. And for me, my understanding is that oneness is not sameness. Oneness isn't sameness. It's coming together as, you know, individuals to create a collective, synthesizing at that level.
Yeah, and well, U2 has a song called One, and it goes, we're one but we're not the same. We are one, as you say, and we're not the same, but we're not separate either, you know. Just like if you look at your hand, okay, this finger and this finger, you know, are part of the one body, the one hand, but they're not the same. This finger does, my thumb is doing something different than this. And I need all fingers for my hands to function. So they're part of the one, but they're not the same.
And when it comes all together, you call it a hand, not just a finger.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one hand with with multiple expressions of that hand, with multiple fingers and the palm, and they all have their role in yeah. playing together.
And when we bridge this gap into leadership, this concept into leadership, we can encourage leaders to look at their people like they, you know, they all have something to bring, because so often there's a subconscious pressure, or maybe there's an overt pressure, to only put forward the light, the good, the performance, the things that gets us rewarded and recognized. But there's always going to be the opposite side of that polarity, the weakness, the less desirable behavior. And, you know, I think sometimes leaders feel effective when they get to manage the bad performance and feel useful and they can chastise. And I just think, wouldn't it be such a more powerful environment when a leader could integrate the full team dynamics, embracing the light, the dark, the gift, the skills, the talents, the weaknesses, the flaws, at the level of the team, like proper belonging and oneness without only... Because if I'm encouraged to cut off my darkness when I come to work, I don't really belong. I just fit in, right?
Well, you're saying a couple of important things, I think. One is you need everybody. Obviously, in a company, you need the salespeople, you need the marketing people, you need the engineer, you need the finance people. So everybody has a contribution. And a good leader is going to make everybody feel like their role is important, you know. It's not like only sales is important, only engineering is important, and you're in finance. Okay, we don't care about you. You're just a bookkeeper.
But, just keep us paid, yeah.
But obviously, finance didn't exist, and we didn't have good measurements of how we're doing. We'd run out of money, and that information is empowering everybody. And so, you know, every role in the company is important, just like every organ, every cell in the human body is important. So that's one piece of what you're saying. I think the other piece is, you know, don't cut off and don't chastise when somebody is falling short of what you hope for. And you reframe it as an opportunity. Well, when you chastise someone, you're undercutting their motivation and their energy and their confidence. It's not going to help them. But if you come to it and say, hey, you're doing this, this, and this really well, and I see the potential in you to do this too as well, and you come with that intention of helping them, then you inspire them, and then they're motivated, and they improve their performance. And they improve their performance, you give them feedback, you express appreciation and gratitude, and that motivates them more. So you have a positive feedback loop of appreciation and performance and energy and motivation versus a negative downward spiraling where you don't perform so well. I give you negative feedback, you feel less motivated, you perform less well, and I keep giving you more feedback, and I try and whip you into shape, and eventually you burn out, or you leave, or you quit, or you're fired. Well, that doesn't help me as the leader, doesn't help the organization, it doesn't help the person. They feel bad about themselves. We feel best about ourselves when we are, you know, performing at our best and feel a sense of competency and mastery. And that's joyful, and that feeds our energy and motivation. So if we assume, we start with the assumption that people are motivated to contribute and want to do their best, and we're just encouraging and supporting them, then it's a win-win.
One of the... So in your book, you wonderfully outlay 7 pillars, and you articulate 25 different domains and competencies, right? It's a wonderful image. It's a brilliant map. And the first pillar is meaning. And probably the greatest gift I gave myself in my career was, you know, I was 25. I'd just become a father, just become a manager for the first time. And I watched Simon Sinek's TED Talk, all talking about the golden circle and find your why. That was probably the greatest gift I gave myself, because it fast tracked all of my every decision, my intentions, my decisions, the things I went on to create, the things I probably did and didn't do, supercharged by this getting to know in my core. And it's evolved and it's expanded as I've got greater understanding of the nuances of my soul and my spirit and my past and my strengths, gifts, traumas, all those sorts of things, right? But let's speak to someone that maybe was in my position. You talk about meaning, and the first thing you talk about is finding a purpose. How does one go about discovering their purpose?
Yeah, interesting. I'm doing a free webinar this Friday on this very topic. But I think basically there are, several components. Our purpose starts with, like you said, finding our gifts, our talents, and what are we uniquely gifted by life. People call it superpowers, whatever. And then discovering how we could use that to contribute. So maybe one of my gifts is, I'm a good listener. So one of the ways I contribute is as a therapist or as a coach, I am listening and making people feel seen and heard, etc. Or I make my children feel seen and heard. And so that's a someone else's gift might be, singing, and they contribute by performing and bringing beauty and inspiration to other people. So identifying our gifts, how, and then asking ourselves, how can we use those to contribute? Because when we do, then one, we have a sense of meaning, and two, we have a sense of mastery. That's what we're good at, and we feel the impact that we're making. And so, when all those things are aligned, so there's joy, there's competency, there's a contribution, and all those things come together. Now, I might enjoy singing, but I'm not particularly good at it. So I might sing, but it never
It's
contribute
not
to
for you
us.
to contribute.
Yeah, I could sing as a hobby, but my kids like to tell me, "Dad, you're not the greatest." So I have to find something that I enjoy, but I'm also good at, and that other people will benefit from. So when those things of my competence, my joy, and my contribution all line up in service of something, then I feel fulfilled. I feel a sense of mastery, and my life has meaning, has purpose.
Yeah, I love that. I wonder whether this is something you observe speaking with many people, and I've helped many people discover their unique gifts, skills, and talents. And one of the first barriers is, I don't know whether it's like humility or self-deprecation, but there's just an assumption that, oh, everybody can do, well, that's unique to me. What, everybody doesn't think like that or act like that? There's so for anybody out there this listening, if you've ever like just assumed that whatever you do well is just that's just what people do, no, it is unique to you. And I try to have this conversation with my daughter is, you know, she's 8 years old. Not everybody can sing and dance and express herself the way that she does. That's not to say that she's better than anyone. That's just to say that that's not your average, and that there's something that is for her to explore as to why that lights her up, why that sparks her specifically. And I think the gift that we potentially are giving her by connecting with that essence of herself at 8 years old, ah, the possibilities are just limitless, right?
Yeah, and you're mirroring her beauty, her light, her competence. Yeah. And so, but as you said, it sounds like she naturally enjoys it because she's built that way, her body. Some people are super athletic, are great dancers, are great, moving to music or whatever. Other people are great at drawing and painting, et cetera. I'm not, if you look at my paintings, they look like a 5-year-old stick drawing. So that's not my thing. I still do it because I enjoy it, but it's not my calling, my purpose. So your daughter is great at it. And again, it's not about being the best in the world necessarily, because that's a zero sum mindset. I have to be the best, otherwise, and then I'm great, but then eventually you find that there's someone who's a little better, and you didn't win the gold medal at the Olympics, so you won it 1 year, and then you didn't next year, and your whole life is struggle. No, this is something I enjoy. It's one of my gifts. I contribute, and people enjoy. I don't need to compare myself to others, where the only way I feel good about myself is I'm better than others. That creates a sense of alienation and separation and competition between
Yes,
people.
yes, yes,
I
yes.
just fulfilled that what I'm doing is enjoyable. I feel a sense of competence in it, and other people benefit and appreciate from it.
Yeah. The next area that you talk about is grace. And, you know, a number of people within my community are really wanting to embrace what it means to have grace. They, I want to be more graceful. What does it mean? And I've explained a couple of times in a variety of different ways, but I'd love to know your perspective. Like, how does one embody the spirit of grace?
Yeah, well, I kind of see it as having these four building blocks, components, or legs of the stool. One is trust. You have to trust and have faith in life. You know, we've all suffered a lot of trauma and pain and difficulty in our life, but somehow, some way, we got here. We're okay. I can look around and say, I am safe. I am okay now. I can find some beauty, some joy, some gratitude. So that gives us a certain faith in life. As Einstein said, one of the fundamental questions is, do we believe we live in a friendly universe? Yes. Or do we think that the universe is run by a malicious devil or whatever? No, you know, fundamentally, obviously, from the hot Big Bang and the chaos, life emerged. And there's some intelligence that brought us here and gave us life and has enabled us to survive, you know, whatever, ice ages and whatever, and personally. So that gives us a basic level of trust in life. You look at the streets, you know, they pave them, whatever, somehow sprouts of grass make through. Life has an amazing power to you know, you just wonder, how did these blades of grass break through the asphalt or whatever? So when we see that, we have a certain basic trust in the power of life. And then from there, we could start to appreciate the beauty that's within and around us, like we talked about. We find the joy that in living our purpose, and we find the gratitude that we have been given these gifts and that we can express and actualize them. So when we have this faith and trust and beauty and joy and gratitude, then it just naturally we're in the flow of life, and that's grace to me.
I love that. Thank you. I think that a wonderful byproduct of really getting to know myself intimately, the good, the bad, the light, the dark, the bits I love, the bits that, the probably hide. When I start to accept and integrate all of those bits, I can't help but have grace for other human beings. Once I realize my own flaws and weaknesses and shortcomings, you know, it doesn't mean to say I'm joyful at the of others when they affect you, but it does make grace possible when you start to see everybody as human. Yeah,
I think
it's a powerful thing, particularly, you know, as leaders, you know, because if it's an egoic sense, quite often what we're projecting onto them is our own fear or lack of control or whatever it might be, and we're attacking the vulnerability because we would hate others to realize our own.
And what you're speaking to is, like, as we learn to accept ourselves, then we can accept others. As we, if I accept the fact that I make mistakes and, you know, whatever, then it's easier for me to accept your mistakes and our shared humanity as you speak about it. And if I'm harsh about you, I'm probably harsh about myself in those same ways. So we're equal opportunity judgers of ourselves and others. So, you know, there's a phrase that we say, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, most of us understand that phrase as a normative statement, like you should love your neighbor as yourself. But there's another way to read it, which is, love your neighbor as yourself is a descriptive statement. If you hate yourself and you judge yourself and these qualities, you're going to do the same on others. So love your neighbor as yourself is like the way you treat yourself, you're going to treat others. So if you find a way to accept and love yourself, not in a selfish, narcissistic way, you know, that love is going to extend to everybody.
Well, it's the understanding of connectedness. If you take that those words to the level of whatever I do to you, I do to me. So if I, there's research that says, do a good deed, you get oxytocin, and everyone who observes that good deed also gets a hit of oxytocin, right? That's one way of love yourself. Everybody gets a shot of oxytocin. It's good for you. But if I shout and scream and rage, like my unsettled nervous system is unsettling your nervous system, meaning we're both getting a dose of cortisol, which is, deleterious to our health. So that for me is what it means, is whatever I do to you, I do to me, and vice versa.
Yeah. And we now understand that, emotions are contagious. We have mirror neurons. If I am in a certain mental state, you walk into a room or a house and people are angry or sad before they say anybody, you feel the energy of it. So we're all impacting each other. And now there's research in the HeartMath Institute that looks at the electromagnetic field that our hearts emanate, and how we're, if my heart is got certain frequencies that negative emotions, that's going to be transmitted and through the electromagnetic field, that's going to affect your heart. And so, yeah. We are connected and we're constantly affecting each other. And that's another way to actually bring some scientific understanding into something that looks very mystical and woo-woo. But no, science is now backing up that this is actually some things we don't understand how that works yet. But certainly some of the things we have more and more understanding about this interconnectedness that you're talking about.
One of the phrases often used in the woo-woo social media side of the world is higher self. Uh-huh. And you include it within the final pillar, which is wisdom. Which is wonderful, isn't it, right? Because, the audience of your book will not just be the woo-woo circle, it will be the practical leadership and business development. How do you reconcile the terminology of higher self, and how does one engage with or gain access to their higher self?
Yeah, well, I think we all have, it can mean different things to different people, and we have different entryways. The easiest way is to think about ourselves 15 years hence and who we want to be. Mm-hmm. And I want to be successful. I'm going to be compassionate. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to be a centered, a human being that has achieved their soul, their purpose, and feel successful. And we just make that mental shift and think, okay, how is that future self going to look back at this moment, and what advice and wisdom? We also realize that future self is already within us, and it has the wisdom. So often, we face a dilemma. We're not sure how to address it, and say, okay, talk to how you imagine yourself to be 15 years from now, and what would that person say to you now? All of a sudden, you see people have incredible insight and wisdom that was obviously it's within them. So we say it's the higher self, but it's actually, the deeper self, you can also say. There are other ways to access it. People have a grandfather or grandmother or some teacher that embodies wisdom, and you say, okay, what would so-and-so say? What would the Dalai Lama say? What would your grandmother say about this? And somehow people can say, oh, my grandmother would say this. And, that's a way. So Jung talked about the wise person archetype, the wise man or the wise woman. And that's a archetype, meaning it's an energy that exists in the collective unconscious that we all have access to, and it's in our psyche, and there are different ways to access it, whether it's the future self or a grandparent or some leader or some spiritual teacher. Those are all techniques to access that wisdom.
A living transmission. The words I was talking to someone recently. I have a word here at Always Been Yesterday. It's called heart print. And, that heart print can both be literal in terms of we give someone a skill or a new capability to go on and do things with, or it can be an energetic frequency, which just reverberates, continues to come back round. And I think you've articulated that wonderfully.
Thank you. Yeah.
One of the I mean, I don't want to go through the entirety of your framework. I want to encourage people to go and get the book and go and read it, because it's very, very powerful. I wonder what would happen if you went back to the Israeli military. Wonder what wisdom you'd go back and share with them.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, first of all, to find compassion for ourselves. We are going through a traumatic experience. I mean, you hear of what the Israeli military did is actually some of the hostages escape and three of them were shot. Now you think about what was that about? It's obviously people were traumatized and they were trigger happy and they were so stressed out they weren't really observing things. So we have to find a way to calm our nervous system, and that starts with some level of self-compassion. We're going through a lot, and this is hard. And then the second thing is we need compassion for the quote-unquote enemy and everybody else. There's no way in our human heart is designed to be compassionate. And when we do violence to another human being, we have to tighten our heart, we have to close our heart, and that hurts our well-being and stifles our life force. So now that doesn't mean that compassion, you don't defend yourself, you don't, someone's coming to kill you, you don't, sometimes you have to kill them first, but you do that as much as you can out of compassion as opposed to hatred, and you understand their humanity. And obviously the only reason they're doing whatever they're doing is because they're suffering. And people that are happy and fulfilled don't initiate war, don't do atrocities, don't torture others. When people do that, it's really coming out of their own suffering and disconnection from their spirit, their essence, because our essential deeper self is naturally compassionate and kind and caring. So it's really about finding compassion for ourselves and compassion to everybody, including, so to speak, our enemy. And even if we have to fight and kill to protect, we, as much as possible, do that through compassion, and we grieve the tragedy of it, and really letting ourselves feel the tragedy. Now, you might not be able to do all this in a moment of battle, but I think you have to, that's how we let this negative energy wash and move through us. So
Yeah,
not,
acknowledging it, feeling it.
yeah, and not traumatized. And this is it's
Yeah.
not easy. I mean, I'm
Courageous. It requires some courageous to look, to go there. And one of the areas of the framework is the inner directed piece. One of the domains you list as centeredness. And obviously this podcast is labeled for heart-centered leaders. And I love it when people offer perspectives on what it means to be centered. And your definition, or at least the way that you describe it, is to remain grounded and open-hearted amid chaos. I love that description. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, we need to feel grounded, like that's our support. Like right now, I'm feeling my feet. I'm like, okay, there's groundedness. I'm getting supported. I'm supported by the chair. I'm supported in the back. So, there's a sense of support and grounding. So I'm not just floating, because that makes gonna make me feel weak. I mean, I'm like a leaf blown in the wind. But if I'm grounded and rooted, then the wind can come, but like a good palm tree or whatever, it sways, it's not fragile. So it's important to be grounded and rooted. And then there's an alignment. And then when I have that alignment, then I've got the flexibility, and from that place of centeredness, you can move to any direction. I'm flexible. You know, so you know, like a good martial artist, they're very much in their body. There's fluidity and flexibility. Their energy, their life force, their chi is flowing naturally. They're not overly tight. So like if you are skiing down a ski slope, you know, you are rooted in your feet and your skis and your whatever, board. But there's a fluidity that you can move with the way the slope is and the moguls and whatever. So that's kind of a place of centeredness and groundedness and connection, where your life force energy and chi flow throughout you. And then you can be responsive to what's happening. You're not rigid.
I love that. I could talk to you all day about this work, but I'd to be super respectful of your time. I gave you an inkling as to that word heartprint a second ago, and I just love for you just to consider what you hope the heartprint of your work and your time here will be. You talked a minute ago about achieving your soul's purpose. You know, what do you hope you'll have achieved? What do you hope your heartprint will be?
Well, I mean, basically my mission, my purpose is to awaken greater spiritual intelligence in myself and in the world. And I think if I try to imagine a world where there's more greater spiritual intelligence, where people are interconnected and interconnected. So there's kind of both sides. There's connection to our deepest essence, the core of our being, our spirit essence, our life force. So that's our interconnection. And when I'm connected there, I'm also, like we talked about earlier, we become interconnected. So if everybody had that quality and understanding of our interconnectedness, then be more peace and harmony and care and love everywhere in the world. And people will be living a meaningful, fulfilled life where they're inspired and connected and contributing. And I think that would be a wonderful world to live in. So if some part of your, anybody who's listening, soul's like, yeah, this would be I'd love to live in a way that I feel empowered, inspired, interconnected, and connected to everybody around me. And that gets somebody to say, well, let me go explore this a little more. I think I will have, you know, feel a delight and a sense of fulfillment from making that little contribution. We're all in this together. So every little piece that we do, we don't know what impact it has and how it affects somebody else and how they're going to affect. That's why I do this work with leaders. They go home and it ripples into their families and, you know, their organizations and, you know, their hundreds or something, thousands of employees, which then go home and affect them. So we're all affecting each other. And we could just imagine a better world that we all want to live in. I mean, fundamentally, all human beings want to be live in peace and harmony and love and joy. And so, yeah, we're in this together. Let's do it.
Love that. What a call to action. Where can people find out more about your good work?
Well, I have a website called yosiamram.net. It's spelled Y-O-S-I-A-M-R-A-M, just my name, .net. And from there are links to different initiatives. I have one website where people can get assessments of their spiritual intelligence and spiritually intelligent leadership. There's a free assessment of spiritual intelligence that people can discover their strengths and places where they can develop. There's my coaching website where I work with CEOs. There's you know, my psychotherapy website where I work with couples on spiritually intelligent relationships, where people can ignite this passionate sacred love in a relationship and use the relationship as a crucible for their spiritual evolution. And then I host these monthly events that are free on awakening spiritual intelligence every every month has a different theme. Last month was on love. This Friday is on purpose. The next one in a little over 4 weeks is going to be on beauty, and then so on. So each of these qualities that we're talking about, we're going to a session and with group exercises and connection, small groups. So it's an experiential thing. I'm blessed, and I try and do a lot, and there are different things that may interest different people. But it's all on that website.
I'll make sure it's all shared in the show notes, and just want to appreciate you and thank you for your time, and just be honored if you'd leave us a final thought from your good self.
Final thought. Well, I guess my final thought would be that, you know, everything in our universe is kind of finite and may seem non-renewable. So like if I have $100 in my pocket, I give you a dollar, I have one less. I have 99. If I have so much milk in my fridge and I can give someone a glass of milk, I have less milk left. But the one thing that is self-renewing and reinforcing is love and care. So if I have a certain amount of love and then I go and share it and express it through appreciation, through gratitude, through an action of guidance, I don't have less love in my heart. I have more capacity. I've enlarged, regardless of how you reciprocate or not, I feel good and I feel more inspired, more loving. So you know, just connecting to our heart and the care and the love, it's an ever-renewing resource that spreads out. So I just love that that idea, and to look at not a scarcity mentality of love, but in a sense of abundance, and that it's self-renewing.
Yossi, I appreciate it, brother. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been delightful.
Hey, my friends, thank you for making it to the end. I hope that our time spent together today has left you a little bit better than before you push play. I'd really appreciate if you just took a moment to leave a review to allow me to meet more people where they are and hopefully leave them a little bit better too. If you're curious to know how I, through Always Better Than Yesterday, can serve you, your team, your organization, then head to alwaysbetterthanyesterday.com to connect. And while you're there, let me know one or two things that you're going to do as a result of listening to this conversation. I absolutely love hearing your thoughts, your reflections, and the things that this spark in your own heart and mind. If you want more insights from my heart and mind, I do send out short episodes on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And again, I hope that they serve you well. I appreciate you listening. I'm Ryan Hartley, host of the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast, a podcast for heart-centered leaders just like you. Keep leading, my friends. Always love.